In Syria, foreign-backed militants and local residents have been granted safe passage to leave the besieged town of Daraa under a truce accord with Damascus. Daraa has been under siege since November 2012 and has come to be known as the longest-standing battle in the war on Syria. Well, the breakthrough comes as the Syrian army has stepped up operations against Takfiri militants across the country. In the major flashpoint city of Aleppo, the army is pushing terrorists back with a determination to purge them from the city. However, operations in the Syrian border town of Jarablus involving Turkey, FSA, and the U.S.-backed Kurdish YPG forces has been hinting that the anti-Damascus allegiances may be more brittle than many had fathomed. That and more in this edition of The Debate. Well, joining us now for this edition of The Debate, we have former American intelligence linguist Mr. Scott Ricard joining us from Tampa, and lecturer of Johns Hopkins University, Mr. Daniel Sirwar, joining us from Washington. Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Let's start off with our guest in Tampa, Mr. Ricard. The Daraa battle appears to have reached a conclusion with this evacuation deal. What does it mean to have the longest-running battle in the Syria war come to a conclusion?
Well, it shows the progress that the Syrian army has had against the foreign-backed mercenaries. If you look at Daraa, it's an example of what has been done by Saudi Arabia, by the United States and their allies, their NATO allies, including Israel and Jordan. These allies have armed the folks in Daraa for quite some time. They even were able to provide TOW missiles, anti-tank missiles, during the siege using clandestine drops from drones. So if you look at the kinds of activity and the kind of funding that's been going on in Daraa, it's caused a massive destruction of that city. There was absolutely no progress made by the mercenaries that were being armed in that region. Now, the population of this city was exceeding 70,000, and to see now that there's an evacuation of only about 4,000 women and children and about 700 militants, it tells you the kind of destruction and the kind of decimation that's gone on there. It was one of the oldest cities in the history of the region, and certainly now it's been reduced to rubble, and it's only been reduced to rubble, and let's be clear about this, because of Western-backed and Saudi-backed, as well as Gulf State allies, the Saudi Gulf State allies. They have been just decimating not only this city, because of their arming and funding and training and support of these mercenaries, but they have been directly involved in the destruction of the illegal and criminal act of war and destruction within Syria. So obviously the Syrian army alongside the Russians and the Iranians and Hezbollah have been very calculated and have fought back very valiantly and have pushed back this foreign intervention into their country. And it looks like it's a good change. In fact, if you look at the group that they overtook, the Martyrs of Islam, these are Sunnis. They claim to be not ideological. They're trying to obviously not work along the crazy ideological front of ISIL. But they certainly are Sunnis, and they have been at war with the Syrian government, not just recently in this war, but also back in the 70s against Assad's father. So this is something that's gone on a long time, and unfortunately the Americans and the Saudis have helped instigate this war, and certainly the Russians, the Iranians, and the Syrians and Hezbollah have actually neutralized it to much degree.
Well, let's bring in our guest from Washington, Mr. Sirwar, in on the discussion. Sir, what do you think was a decisive factor in striking this truce accord for Daraa? Many believe it reflects the gains that the Syrian army has been making recently across the country.
I think the decisive factor is the willingness of the Assad regime and the Syrian army to wreak destruction on the town and to kill lots and lots of civilians. In fact, they've besieged the town. Sieges in modern warfare of civilian populations are, of course, a war crime. And it's quite clear that they've been willing to do just about anything to defeat an insurgency that was really organic and genuine of Syrians. They may have gotten some arms from Saudi Arabia or other sources. I don't really know about that, but they may well have. But the fact of the matter is that this is the defeat of an organic rebellion that grew in Daraya because of the abuses committed by the Syrian regime, which has compounded those abuses in defeating the rebellion.
Mr. Ricard, you're shaking your head there. Would you like to respond to those comments? Mr. Sorwar believes that what was happening in Daraya was an organic rebellion.
Well, unfortunately, Professor Sorwar has taken upon himself to continue the rhetoric and the Western ignoring the elephant in the room, that this was absolutely instigated by the West and supported over 4 years. Now, a siege of a city being a war crime, well, let's be clear about this. The Americans siege on cities across Iraq, sieges on cities across Afghanistan, sieges on cities throughout the world in their war crimes that they've committed. Let's be clear about looking at things from a realistic and reasonable perspective, that the numbers of individuals that the Americans have displaced and sieged upon far exceeds anything Assad has ever done. And in fact, when you're looking at this particular city, he's allowing these people to leave under safeguard, and he could have actually just easily murdered them all. So when you look at the fact that they are surrendering is really what's happening here, because they because of the siege, that's the way war is fought, unfortunately. You have to starve out your adversaries, and the Americans do it all the time. They starve out their adversaries, and they use embargoes, they use sanctions, and they use all of these types of tactics in order to siege upon not only cities but countries. So this is not, you know, something that's abnormal to the world, but it is something that Assad was forced to do. His hand was forced to do this because of the massive amounts of influence coming not only out of Saudi Arabia. He forgets to mention Israel. Mr. Sorwar forgets to mention Jordan. He forgets to mention Turkey. He forgets to mention France. He forgets to mention the United States and the United Kingdom. He forgets to mention Qatar. There's just a long list of individuals dedicated hundreds of billions of dollars to this operation that has absolutely decimated a country. And these are the real war criminals, because there was absolutely no reason to do that.
Mr. Sorwar, would you like to respond to that? Mr. Ricard believes that there's a long list of countries.
Well, Mr. Ricard needs to bone up on his international law. He needs to study a little bit better American military tactics, which do not besiege civilian
populations.
I have
been in the military, and I know all about international law. I think you need to stop reading the New York Times and pressing propaganda around the world, not only in your interviews, but to your students. You have misled people your entire lives with propaganda that you're pushing.
You should shut up and let me speak.
All right, Mr.
I've listening to you speak, and you're speaking a bunch of gibberish, and it's horrible, because I've read your book and I know what kind of background you have.
Okay. I've had it.
No,
that's it.
Mr. Sorwar, please.
All right. I'm out of here.
Unfortunately, Mr. Sorwar has left the program. We're going to continue with our guest in Tampa, Mr. Scott Ricard. Mr. Ricard, just recently, you just earlier mentioned Turkey and the United States. Turkey just deployed more forces into northern Syria in what has come to be known as Operation Euphrates Shield. Now, Ankara has been clear that the operation is as much about stopping the Kurdish YPG, the U.S.-backed Kurdish YPG group, from seizing more territory along the border. It seems a conflict of interest among the anti-Damascus clique seems to be a new variable in the equation now.
Well, I think what you see here is Turkey's playing both sides now. They've obviously come a little bit closer to Russia based upon the recent coup and Russia being involved in helping Erdogan survive that coup. At the same time, if you look at Erdogan, he's also very much opposed to the YPG. And when they're saying that this particular Euphrates operation is freeing up the ISIS, they're actually pushing back also on the YPG. The YPG's made a lot of headway, and they're taking over just pretty much the entire district of Hasakah. And Hasaka, obviously, has been a contention for not only Assad, but also Turkey for quite some time. So I think what you see here is that you're looking at the Russians and the Turks also cooperating with each other on the push for YPG, because at one point, both the Russians and the Americans were courting the YPG to use them as adversaries in their attempt to fight this mercenary war that's gotten out of hand, predominantly called ISIS at this point. But at this time, what you're seeing with the actual effect of what's happening with Turkey's coming in and saying, look, we're not going to allow this YPG force to move forward, and this is something that we're not going to allow as NATO partner. And then the other side of that, obviously, you have the Americans that have set up camp there. They're training the YPG. They're actually embedding American, former American military and CIA are embedded with the YPG now and are operating. And then what I think is happening here is that I believe that the American forces believe that they can use the YPG as a replacement a supplement for the Free Syrian Army, a dwindling, I should say, Free Syrian Army that has gone away. I mean, there's, just this surrender in Deraa is a great indication. And they're going to Idlib, which is really the founding of the Martyrs of Islam. And Idlib's just next. I mean, Idlib's the next city. The Syrians have been very successful at liberating Aleppo. And so now I think what you see is that the U.S. and their allies have realized that al-Nusra isn't going to be able to do it for them, FSA isn't going to be able to do it for them, and they've turned to the YPG because the YPG has an interest in finding their own sovereignty in the Hasaka district. And that's something that I don't believe that the Turks want whatsoever.
Mr. Ricard, what does it mean to have countries like Iran and Russia in such a substantial role in the fight against terrorism in the region?
Well, I think it's a, good, indicator of the kinds of, exposure to the foreign policy of the Americans and their allies. I think what you've seen here is when Russia got involved and was able to start their bombing campaign, and it was able to expose the hypocrisy of the West in the oil trade in the north east of Syria, when the Turks and the Iraqis and this ISIS organization were cooperating on the theft and the financing of the war through the oil trade. When the Russians came in and bombed all the tankers, I think that was a good indication that, you know, they exposed the exposure of what the West was involved in. You know, because I've said this before, the West was supposedly bombing ISIS for over a year, but basically held, you know, less than Fort Milosevic. They actually bombed over 33 bombings in only about 75 days. So I think it's clear that the U.S. was nurturing the operation that was going on there, hoping that they could get it back under control after the Iraqis got involved, and hoping that they could use that force to complete the operation of toppling Assad. But the fact is that Iran and Hezbollah and Russia has thwarted those efforts, and now you have, you know, what I would say FaceTime with John Kerry and the foreign minister from Lavrov from Russia. You have FaceTime where they're talking about peace accords, and I think what we'll see now that Turkey's become a little bit closer with Russia, there may actually be some cooperation. Having said that, there is also the contention of Hasaka, and there is also contention of the YPG, and I think that's something to keep an eye on.
What does all this mean in the bigger picture for Damascus in its fight against terrorist groups like Daesh and its kin?
Question again, please.
I said, what does all this mean in the bigger picture when we're looking at the advances that have been made in various cities and provinces in Damascus, but in the bigger bigger picture, what does this all mean for Damascus in the fight against terrorist groups like Daesh and its branches and kin?
Well, you know, in a good world, in a good outcome, what it would mean is that, you know, the exposure gets spread across the United States, where you don't have, unfortunately, the brainwashed parakeets in the United States. You know, basically, a lot of people in the United States are talking a lot like Professor Sewer. They believe the propaganda. They don't understand how their country was massively involved in the destruction of not only Syria but other countries around the world. And so I think this might be an opportunity because of the exposure that's come out with Russia and even China and other countries not cooperating in the Security Council at the United Nations, and exposing not only the operations in Syria, but also exposing a lot of the exposure that's coming out of the communications. If you look at the emails that are coming out from Hillary Clinton, you know, more and more people are becoming aware of the fact that, hey, wait a second, you mean everything that they've been telling me in the news for the last 4 or 5 years about Syria might be a lie? Well, they actually, there are a lot of people that are coming to that conclusion. So in a good world, I would say the fact is that more and more people will become aware, and they'll start fighting against the Professor Sewers of the world and negating the lies and the distortions of the truth that's been going on for so long in this country. But unfortunately, I think what will continue to happen is that you have a society that is just the most over-entertained, misinformed, and ambivalent in the history of the world, that I think that what we'll see is we'll just see the continued propaganda being pushed, and a few of us that step outside the brainwashed realm and try to help others understand that this is not what they're being told is what they're being told is a lie.
Mr. Ricard, one last question. With the prospect of the full liberation of Mosul just months, if not weeks away, I think it's safe to say that Baghdad is also now in that anti-terror alliance with Syria.
Well, Mosul's a different case. When you talk about Mosul, Mosul is, it's a very large city. There's, over 400,000 people there, and there's 400,000 AK-47s there. And so the people of Mosul have been under siege by the predecessors of the Ba'ath Party. And these individuals that have gone up there and have taken over this city have just, just caused a tremendous amount of fear and tremendous amount of torture, to whereby there's a few individuals that do actually control Mosul. They're talking that it's only about 20,000 combatants in a city of 400,000. I think what you'll see is once it's seized, that there'll just be a bloodbath, and the 20,000 people that are there will go out of their way to kill as many as they can, and vice versa. Those hundreds of thousands that have been under siege for so long may see an opportunity to attack back and finally attack back. And unfortunately, the people that have cooperated with these combatants will be victims of the massacre. So I think you'll see tens of thousands of people dying in a very short time because of the massive amounts of armament that's in that city and the kinds of revenge and retribution people are looking for.
Okay, we're out of time for this edition of Press TV's debate, which turned out to be more of a one-on-one with our guest, Mr. Scott Ricard, former American intelligence linguist, joining us from Tampa. Thank you for staying with us for the entire program. And also a special thanks to our guest, Mr. Daniel Sower, who's joining us from Washington, who only stayed with us for a question and a half. And that's it for now for myself and the entire team here in Tehran. It's good night, everybody.
Or 15,000 bombing campaigns in a year. And I compare that to Bosnia, and when they were going against